We'll get started here. We don't have a quorum, but we will, I guess, just get going, and we'll officially call the meeting order when we do get a quorum. Representative Bradley, do you want to essentially kind of set the stage? And I guess we don't have enough, we don't have a quorum here to have an official motion in front of us, but we can get started. So, Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a kind of a brief process. I am going to do a little bit of budget background with some materials in the members' packet that Ms. Shield prepared. I will then give a little bit of some of the framework of the budget side of the governor's proposal, and then I'll go through the governor's proposal as it was originally formed pre-February forecast. I want to, if anything I can try to do today in a fairly complicated bill and a fairly complicated budget, is to try to at least have clarity. We may discuss and disagree even on something, but at least let's be sure that we have clarity. Then we will have a very brief presentation about the February forecast to bridge through a couple of amendments that will update the bill per the February forecast. There's a couple of new proposals that are included from the governor. And I think then when we complete that work, I'm hoping that we'll have an opportunity for some committee discussion. In the process of presenting, I would request for the committee that if there are questions of clarification, that we handle those, and that's fine. But if there's questions of opinions and debate, I would hope that we could hold those largely for the discussion period, and if it has to flow into tomorrow, that would flow into tomorrow. So that would be my plan. So, members, let's begin with the handout in your packet that's titled Health and Human Services Fiscal Year 2004-2009, as presented again. I thank Ms. Schill for putting this together. It's not my intent to go through all of this. Members can keep it as background, but let me just sort of highlight a few points of information from the individual charts. First, on the first page is a one that's titled Committee Funds by Source. And the only thing I would point out there is just sort of one indication from the current biennium to the next biennium that we're talking about projected by current law a 19% or so increase in general fund spending. That's a theme I think that we've heard a lot. The next chart just gives a breakdown of the Department of Health, and the reason that we probably won't spend very much Department of Health is probably sort of shows on this chart, and that is that the Department of Health uniquely has only about 16% of their expenditures are general fund dollars. Otherwise, about 41% of those are federal funds and a lot of grants. The Department of Human Services pie chart on the next page shows a little different picture. About half of their expenditures are general fund. You'll note that we have a significant part that is federal funds. Typically, that's in our medical programs, where we typically, in medical assistance, for example, get about a 50% match. And that's all I wanted to mention there. The next chart, although it's busy and there's lots of numbers, but it's one that I think members could spend some time studying, and I think it bears pretty heavily on the governor's recommendations. I would sort of highlight just three items. If you look at the trend lines, that's what's most important, I think, is the trend lines for MA families and children, which, as you can probably tell, in the 2009, under current law, we would be approaching about $1 billion a biennium of expending. In the MA elderly and disabled, again, where it would be is in that $850 million or so range by that time. And then also in our GANC spending, you can see that would be totaling somewhere around $450 million. In part, it's the total dollars, but even more importantly, members, I would just sort of bring to your attention, just look at the slope on those lines. And one of, I think, our challenges is that no matter what we try to do, we cannot sustain the slope of those lines. And I think we're not alone in that. Minnesota's not alone in seeing expenditures in public assisted programs have expenditure increases, inflation rates that are not sustainable. On the next page is something called Medical Assistance Continuing Care Grants, and I would just highlight, I'll probably make comment on something else, but if again you look at the total amount of expenditures, which by 2009 would exceed $1 billion, but even more again is the slope of the line on the MA long-term care waivers and home care. The interesting part, which is maybe to our good, is if you look at long-term care facilities, pretty much per our strategy, we're seeing reductions in our spending. That's kind of the trend of moving away from requirements of people being in nursing homes and moving more and more to community-based. Now, it's really hard to tell because the alternative care, the group residentials are so small down there, it's sort of hard to read trends. And Mr. Chair, members, that's all I really wanted to highlight. There is additional information that members can peruse. There's a lot of detail in this backup, but I thought it would be kind of helpful to give a little bit of background. Now, let me move, if I may, Mr. Chair, into the actual governor's bill. But before I move into the governor's bill, I want to spend just a moment. And I don't expect everybody to remember all these numbers, but I want to remind us of something. In the governor's bill, if you look at just budget, we're going to be talking about the bill, we're going to be talking about a lot of language. But members should be aware that the governor also makes $60 million of additional investments in the next biennium in his bill. $60 million of new programs, expansions. And let me just kind of list for you a few of those. The governor invests about $34 million in the forensic services operation. We've had discussions in this committee about the forensic services area, our state-operated services, and the growth in those areas as we handle sex offenders and other dangerous offenders. The governor also makes about a $3.5 million investment in improving mental health benefits. And in fact, you'll see, because frankly that was missing just by an omission in the bill that's before us, but you'll see in an amendment to catch up and to have the language added to the bill this morning. The governor also makes about a $5 million investment in American Indian Child Welfare. The governor also makes about a $2.2 million investment in transition for children who are leaving foster care. The governor also makes about a $600,000 investment in licensing standards for out-of-home placement. The governor makes a $1.1 million expansion in the administrative fair hearing process in the department. The governor, and I think this is one that has gotten a lot of publicity, makes a $10 million investment in homeless initiatives. These are the services side, not the the bonding bill also has money, but this is the services side of the services for people who are chronically homeless. And then finally, and I think we heard this in our committee when we had the meth bill, but the governor also proposes a $600,000 investment in expanding meth treatment. So that's a total of an additional $60 million that the governor proposes in the governor's budget for additional investments. Now, the governor also does recommend, and these have received a lot of media attention, and I don't mean to duck them. There are some tough choices involved, but just to kind of at least lay these sort of in front of the committee, the major items of changes, reforms, savings, whatever terminology you want to use, include the following. First of all, the governor recommends that we go from an AWP minus 11.5 to AWP minus 14 in the reimbursement to pharmacists. And that would save about $14 million. The governor also recommends a 5% reduction in hospital rates for general fund that yields about $52 million. That also affects our health care access fund. The governor also has some integrity in investments in better managing health care savings. I think there's also in a more intensive medical management, those kinds of things, and that's about $1.5 million of savings. The governor also proposes to implement in a multi-year process a new nursing rate reform. And I think, although it does have some savings, I think that that isn't really what was done. It's done more for transformation. But it does end up netting a $1.6 million savings by taking the APS contract that was planned, canceling that, and then providing a 2% in the first year, and then a phased-in rate restructure in nursing homes. Another fairly significant area, and remember back to that chart showing the waivers and what the expense growth is, the governor proposes to limit growth in those waivers, and that will yield something over $50 million in savings. The governor also, in trying to take advantage of what's happening in the Medicare Modernization Act, and we've had some discussion already about the Medicare Part D, but to propose a elimination with some wraparound of the prescription drug program that would save about $14 million. And then one other fairly significant action, which doesn't really take away what's currently going on, but delays something. The governor originally, from 2 years ago, we had proposed to have something called Projects of Regional Significance. And the governor proposes in his budget to delay that, and that would provide a net biennium saving of $50 million. To give you just at least a couple of highlights in the Healthcare Access Fund, the two primary restructuring or reforms are the 5% hospital reduction, just like we did in the general fund, would yield about $3.7 million of savings in Healthcare Access Fund. And then finally, the restructuring, and this is the combination of eliminating eligibility for adults without children in Minnesota Care, reducing eligibility to 190% for adults with children, and then doing some GAC enhancements, which include, for example, the restoration of the GAMC spend down. And the net on that, in terms of savings, is around $175 million. That's kind of the numbers background.
And I apologize. Bradley, I'm going to stop you here quick. We'll officially call this meeting order. Representative Emmer moves the March 15th, 2005 minutes. Are there any additions or corrections? Additions or corrections? Seeing none, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes pass. A couple quick housekeeping items before we continue here. First off, Chairman Huntley will be having a licensing subcommittee meeting this evening at 6 p.m., room 500 North. We will be hearing House File 977, House File 1112, House File 1190, House File 1294, House File 1313, House File 1370, and House File 1594, and Representative Huntley says it will take 45 minutes.
That's for the first bill, Mr. Chairman.
I guess officially we need to say that this committee is sending those bills to the licensing subcommittee, so... okay, that part is done. And now, Representative Bradley, do you have an official motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move that House File 1422 be held open for possible consideration in the Omnibus Health Finance Bill.
Representative Bradley moves House File 1422 be held over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Service Finance Omnibus Bill. Representative Bradley, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would suggest members now pull out the House Research Bill Summary. And let me again repeat, my plan is to review, and what you're going to see in this House research, this is as the bill was introduced, which means it's prior to the February forecast. We will be dealing later on with a couple of amendments to update it per the forecast. But I thought, for sake of clarity, this is the bill that's been out before. Remember, people had a chance to review it. Rather than sort of confuse it by doing a delete all or something, I think that would have been unfair to members keeping track. So we will walk through that House research summary, and I'm going to begin now, first of all, on the summary, page 2. Article 1 of the governor's bill speaks to licensing, fairly straightforward, just increases licensing and background study fees. Article 2 deals with state-operated services. And this deals some of these things we've heard a lot about, but this is pilot programs. This is where we implement the adult mental health enterprise activities. There's some changes in sort of the way things are financially tracked. And then probably on the more significant is to develop additional sites for the Minnesota Security Hospital. And there is language in the bonding bill regarding this as well, but there's language in this bill. And correspondingly to move through the closure of regional treatment centers. That's Article 2.
Sure.
Article 3. Oops.
Representative Huntley, clarifying question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bradley, on this page 7 of the bill, that's the closure of regional treatment centers. Currently, there's an agreement between the governor, at least the previous governor, probably two or three previous, about closure such that no employees will be laid off or lose their jobs if we close regional treatment centers. Does this language acknowledge that, or are we going to not live by that agreement?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, I'm going to have to ask the department to be sure on this. If you look on that page 7, there's a criteria established under laws 2003, and that makes sure that we keep to our word on the Junkie Amendment, which said we've got to have work up local agreement. I think the answer to your question is that we are still bound by those kind of agreements, but I would ask... I was fooled. Well, go ahead and say I'm correct.
Welcome to the committee. Stand for the record and answer the question.
Mr. Chair, my name is Mike Tester. I'm the Chief Executive for State Operated Services, and Representative Bradley is correct. We are still bound by the collective bargaining agreements, which give employees the ability to choose numerous options when these transitions occur.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please proceed, Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving on now then to Article 3, which is page 3 in your summary. And that is a fairly substantive article. There are some financial transactions that move money from the general fund, or move programs, if you will. This is largely GAMC, from the general fund into the healthcare access fund. I had toyed with the idea of spending some time with people showing you some of the detail I've seen and this show has been involved in. Of sort of the really complicated transactions. I guess the net to me is this, and I think I've said this to the members before, that we have reached a point in our overall healthcare safety net where the real focus, I think, for this committee needs to be on protecting the overall blended safety net, because it's almost impossible these days to focus just on Minnesota Care, or just on medical assistance, or just on GAMC, because through waivers, through the blending of monies, through health match, all kinds of effects, we are seeing movement of people around. And I think what's really important to remember, I've heard this sometimes, well, there's a surplus in the healthcare access fund, and I would invite somebody to say, okay, go ahead and spend that surplus, because what that would mean then is that we would have to kill GAMC as a program, or remove more people from MA, or those kinds of things. So I think it does make sense. I believe there's language in the bill that calls for the department to come back in the next legislative session and to sort of give us a better set of recommendations. We're sort of handicapped in managing our overall healthcare programs by having these sort of individual programs. But I think it's important for us as a committee to sort of keep in mind that there are consequences, and if you think only healthcare access fund and don't combine it with the general fund, we run into some troubles. So at any rate, there are some transfers into and out of it. Those tend to be sort of net zero in terms of the dollars. The second item, if you just look at those summaries, is the item which would reduce the prescription drug reimbursement from the AWP minus 11.5, where we currently are for pharmacies, to AWP minus 14. And then there's also some purchasing changes that are made as well. The third bullet in that list is the 5% reduction in hospital rates. The fourth bullet is... the combination of eliminating the GAMC hospital-only coverage, but also reinstating the GAMC spend-down, which if you looked at the details of the budget, you'll see is a fairly considerable investment to make that GAMC spend-down available to people. And that becomes largely the safety net, particularly for adults without children. The next bullet is the eligibility on Minnesota Care, and that's the one which I mentioned before when I quickly went through the budget numbers, would eliminate Minnesota Care eligibility for adults without children, able-bodied adults without children, and reduce the eligibility for parents or adults with children to 190%. And then the last bullet is a fairly lengthy section in the bill that deals with DHS recovery authority on trusts and annuities. It is structured in a kind of a different way. First of all, it is prospective only, which if you remember back to the liens on life estates was an issue. So this is only looking forward, does not do it retrospectively. And secondly, it doesn't do anything about liens. There's no lien language in this section. This is all about when estates are probated, where if there is a debt, a legitimate debt, that the state has a right to some of that. It gives the state an opportunity to recover some of those expenses if there are trusts and annuities. And it's a fairly long section. I would tell you that the plan of the chair, and I'll probably repeat this, I intend to carve that out into a separate bill. You know, we could wait till later, but I really think that we need to make sure that the Civil Law Committee has a full-fledged hearing in this section. And we need to move because I think the clock is going to catch up, or the calendar is going to catch up with us. So I intend to carve that section out, take that to Civil Law. Whatever ends up coming out of that would then come back to our committee before we ultimately deal with an omnibus bill. That's Article 3, the health care article. Any questions on that article?
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bradley, back to sort of the beginning of Article 3 and the transfers in and out of the Minnesota Care Fund. The last thing there says that Minnesota Care shall be a forecasted program. Does that mean that the commissioner will not have the authority then to disenroll people if the health care access fund becomes a deficit?
Representative Bradley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm going to need some help on that. If I understand right, I don't know that we take away the current language on enrollment, but can I get a little help on that one?
Mr. Chair, members.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Jane Hardwick from the Department of Human Services. Current law does not allow the agency to invoke those provisions of non-enrollment, but essentially makes the program an entitlement program through 2007. And so this would continue current law in a different form of language consistent with the other transactions and transfers occurring under the governor's budget recommendation.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, I forgot about that. I think that was part of the 2003 kind of an agreement that was reached. So this would actually return it back to what you and I sort of recognize in the law that says that if you look forward and you expect it to be in deficit, then you manage the enrollment. And that's what I think we've been accustomed to. But we, because of the agreements that were in 2003, we took some of that away short term.
Oh. That's an enabler.
Oh, thank you. So you discussed the things that this, any Article 3 question is what you want to hear now, right?
In terms of discussion now, my suggestion would be if there's clarification questions now.
Right. Yes. Well, if you would clarify for me, and maybe not just, I'm very interested in the topic of the healthcare management, and there was a report we got a month and a half ago now, I suppose, from the department. It was kind of new, with some proposals about how to manage some of the DHS medical assistance, healthcare programs, et cetera. Are those contained in here? And I was looking at this medical board thing, which I wonder about the makeup of that, not for now, but as we go on and talk with the department, maybe it should be a little more broadly based board than what they have. But they've talked about having a few people hired to do some of this management, and they need a director, I know. Is some of that reflected in this bill, or is another bill coming, do you know?
Representative Bradley.
Sure, I believe that the board and the medical director language is in here.
Right, I know that.
That much is in, but I know there were also some things on medication. I'm trying to think of the right word now. We're basically chronic conditions that we have better management. I don't remember seeing something on that. Maybe something. I know there are some of the things in, Representative Abler, but I'm not sure that all of those recommendations are yet in here.
Thank you.
I think you're going to get an answer, Representative Abler.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Kathleen Cota with the health care part of DHS. Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, there's an intensive clinical care management piece that's in here that focuses on the people who are the very highest users of health care and are chronically ill in the fee-for-service program, and would help them to manage their care so they use less ER and inpatient.
And Representative Abler. Mr. Chair, Ms. Cota, what pages would that be on the bill itself?
Ms. Cota.
You know? Or what article?
It's
Article 3 section.
It's an Article 3.
You don't know which section. Okay. Well, I can look for it. I just wanted to know. And Mr. Chair.
Representative Ms. Schultz.
Mr. Chair, members, that is reflected on budget change page number 30. And so that might give you, there are citations at the very end of that budget page that you can reference the appropriate place in the code.
Representative Abler, any further?
I guess I'm just doing clarification now, but I'm just to let the committee and the chair and the department know that I'm very interested in this topic, and I'm, as I expressed earlier when they came in the beginning, I think there's a better way to do some of this. This is a $900,000 project, as I recall, hiring a fair amount of staff. I'm not convinced it would accomplish what they would want, and I hope that as we work this, we can find a way that would even accomplish a greater and maybe for a little more better price in this whole department. So of those proposals you brought forward, the only proposal in here is a chronic disease management and then the medical board. Is that right? Thank you very much.
And Mr. Chair, if I can, comment, I mean, we're looking for sort of clarification.
Right.
And we're going to have time. This is all going to come back to us.
Right.
It's still going to come back as an omnibus proposal with the opportunities then to amend and all those kinds of things. So that discussion is certainly merit. As a matter of fact, we're not really finding that intensive care of section in here. So we're going to have to follow up, I think, and be sure. Because I don't remember seeing that.
I didn't know reading it, Mr. Chair. No. Thank you very much.
That's a good one.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like the woman from the department to stay here for a minute. Thank you. My question is, did you look at changes when you proposed this budget, while you were proposing this budget, did you look at changes to the premium structure instead of cutting people off of health care?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if Representative Goodwin was here, but we did ask if members could look for clarification. If you have discussions about alternatives, about opinions and stuff, we're going to try to have time after we complete the bill. Once we start down this path, then we'll never get through the bill. So if members I explained that before, and I think this is more down the line of asking a question about if you want some alternative, why didn't you choose an alternative? That's not explaining the bill.
Well,
Representative Goodwin, you'll be the first one we'll ask to speak at the end of the presentation of the bill.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a little problem with the fact that we're always trying to control the way questions are asked, but outside of that, I'll abide by the chair's wishes. And
well, Mr. Chair, I did talk to Lead and your side ahead of time, and we thought this was the best way to try to have a good, honest discussion and to make sure we got all the information in front of us and then have an opportunity for a debate. So I did talk ahead of time. We're prepared to move on to Article 4. Article 4 in your summary starts on page 10. And this article does include a 2% rate increase in the first year of the next biennium. That's basically from current rates. But I think then, if you look at the article, it's almost entirely dedicated then to the phase-in, of a new nursing facility reimbursement system. And I won't try to go through all the detail, at least let me review in concept. And by the way, the phase-in occurs over several years. As a matter of fact, in the first year, which would be the second year of the biennium, only 10% of any rate increase will be based on a new system of quality, target, those kinds of things. And that'll be, I think it's 2009 before there's an entire phase-in. Essentially, the concept that's in this section tries to base the increases. First of all, of course, there is a cost-based angle which would require, to see the language, the collection of cost information from the nursing homes, current nursing homes. Then the actual rate calculations were based on sort of two factors. Because frankly, I'm not a big fan of just basing rate increases on cost. I mean, we used to do that, frankly, and what that did was encourage spending so that you'd get an increase in future years. You had to kind of wait some number of months to catch up, but it's not really a good way to encourage efficiency. The way efficiency is encouraged is to then establish what was called a target rate, which is based on regional areas, and say, where is your rate in comparison to target? So that's one factor. In other words, if your current rate is significantly lower than the target for your region, that would give you an enhancement in terms of your new rate, any rate increase. If your current rate is higher than the target, that would bear in terms of reducing the amount of any increase. So it's a way to try to bring some factor of efficiency into the formula. The other major factor, which excites me, and I realize that any time you get into trying to measure quality, there's a lot of controversy about what it might be, and how you measure it, but the other factor would be based on quality. And what this would say is that in second part, your rate of increase would depend on how well you do in terms of the number of quality measures. And the bill shows a number of those already. My expectation over the years, of course, as it always does with any business's quality initiatives, that will probably evolve and improve. But for example, it does include staffing ratios, things like that, in its initial cut. That's basically the concept that's in this. And I think maybe if I go any deeper than that, it will probably be just we could consume more than one whole meeting just doing that. That,
Mr. Chairman.
I think I've covered it all. Yeah, that's all I would have to say on that section.
Just a clarifying question. We're looking at what sections in Article 4 on that. Does it begin on Section 5?
The actual section that deals with the new reimbursement, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Powell, the actual section that deals with the new reimbursement starts in Section 19.
Very good. Thank you.
Moving on to the next section, I'm going to skip because Article 5 is in the domain of the Jobs Committee. That's Children's and Families. And likewise, Article 6, which in your summary is on page 20, is the Jobs Committee because it deals with child support collections and so forth. Now we move to Article 7, which is the Health Department proposals in the Governor's Bill. And almost all of the section has to do with fee increases. And you have, I believe, a handout. This is a kind of an eye test strain, and with my crazy eye, this is really a strain. But I believe you have a handout that looks laid out in landscape form with fairly small print. And what that does is that summarizes the rate, the fee increases. I think, let me give a couple of quick backdrop kinds of things, because I asked the department, because I knew that sooner or later Representative Rukavina would ask the questions. Number one, in every case, these monies go into special revenue accounts. So we're not talking about something that goes into the general fund. Number two, they meet the standard of the increases, and that's what you see on this sheet. If you notice on this sheet, and let me just use an example, the well management fee, the first one there, explains that the fee would be increased for cost recovery only. In other words, it's catching up with cost. In every case, these are only recovering the actual cost of administering these programs. And I don't know if it's really necessary. Maybe we could at least quickly go through while we have a moment. I'll just go through using this summary that I just referenced. There are increases in well management fees, and as I indicated to you, those are just catching up with costs. There are fee increases in adverse events, and you may have heard that there's some controversy about this one. When those arrangements were struck in terms of the adverse events expansion to surgical centers, there apparently were some agreements about who should pay. The fact of the matter is, of course, from the department's point of view, they're just presenting the fact that in order to recoup our costs, we need to increase the fees. We may very well engage as time moves on, and we may hear testimony subsequently about who should be paying that. The third item is vital records, and this is cost recovery. Maintaining current service. They're eliminating some subsidies that were coming from other sources, a kind of a combination thing in that third column of what's called proposals. The drinking water protection is also pretty much as cost recovery. The next page is laboratory certification. And again, this is cost recovery for current services. Also is responding to increased demand for technical assistance that's occurring. On the food, beverage, and lodging program, it is cost recovery. However, and I think maybe some of you have heard that it is also implementing. I believe we had some discussion when we were going through the budget pages, but this is also implementing new federal standards for school kitchens. The food manager certification is cost recovery. The plumbing program, again, is there's no fee increase in that one, as a matter of fact. There is an expenditure increase, but there's enough funds in the fund to take care of that. And then finally, occupational therapy is one of those examples where that special revenue fund actually has a surplus, and they're going to have a fee holiday in order to take care of it. So that's the fee part of that section of the bill. And let me also highlight for members from our summary that there were in the health department, which again is Article 7, starting on page 20 of your summary. There are some sections that I'll bring to your attention that are beyond the fee section. So let me review that. Sections 8 through 10, which is on page 22 of your summary, is creating opportunities for dentists for loans. These are dentists that make some agreements to serve at least 25% of state program enrollees, so it's kind of an enhancement in that area. It brings them into some of our loan programs. So that's what that section is. Section 17, beginning on page 24, is a bill that we already heard. That's the positive alternative section. So that's in here. On sections 18 and 19 is the suicide prevention. I believe members will recall when we reviewed the budget pages, the governor's proposal was to reduce our state, or I think it was actually eliminate our state funding this on the presumption of federal monies, and this language is you can see it's kind of to the extent of funds appropriated, which mean how well we do in bringing in federal money. And then on section 28, which is page 27 of your summary, is sort of an interesting set of repeals and changes, which did a little more than some people wanted to see. And what this would have done, what it does in the current bill, and we're going to amend this to change it, but in the current bill, not only does it remove the small expenditure for managing the complementary and alternative health care practice, but it actually eliminates it entirely as a function and eliminates all of the legislative language. That was not the intent of the health department, so we will restore the language part in an amendment subsequently. That's the health department. There's no questions. We'll move on. I think it's the question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Thiessen. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just what you said about the suicide is that it's now keeping the money there, except it would reduce if there was federal money that came in? I wasn't clear on exactly what.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, if I recall right in the budget pages, I believe that the money's been removed, yeah. But the budget page spoke about getting federal money. This language just allows them to spend that federal money.
So we're still removing the state.
Still removing it. Still removing it, yes.
Please proceed, Representative
Bradley. And then the final article, Mr. Chair, members, is the appropriations, and most of that's kind of boilerplate language. I will try to highlight for members those things that I think might be a little bit more than that. On page 32 of your summary, I would just bring to your attention subdivision 8. It is rider language that does the things that we've already reviewed. It's not new news, but this is where the language is about limiting growth in our waivers. So you have several sections in the disabled, TBI, MRRC waivers, those kinds of things. And then there's language in there as well on this methamphetamine abuse treatment. So those are the, as I said, it's not new, but this is where the language is, which is a little bit more than just sort of the boilerplate language. And that's it. Those are all the sections, because I think the rest of the sections are pretty much boilerplate. So I would just pause for if there's any questions. What I will intend to do now, Mr. Chair, is to ask Ms. Hardwick to take us to the next step, which would be now to update us on in terms of the supplemental budget, in terms of the February forecast, and anticipating two amendments that we'd be doing to give us a little bit of background for those amendments.
Sure. Representative Huntley.
Chair, before we get to that, I just had another clarifying question. I assume it was back in health care, but does this bill still have the restrictions on hemophilia, plasma, drugs that was somewhat controversial?
Yeah.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, I glossed because there was a sentence in that summary about various prescription drugs, and that 340B language is in here, yes.
All right, Representative Abler.
Just, and Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I was doing a bill in a different committee. That's why I was late today. And did you talk about the closure of RTC language in there as you walked through, that the commissioner may close? In the past, we've had legislative requirement, and now we're deciding the commissioner close. Which of those they will. I think that'll at least be controversial as it seems along the stream.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we did go through that. And what we pointed out was, one, if you look at the language, it acknowledges the agreements that were reached in terms of the local control, that you have that local agreement. And two, we are still bound by the contract agreements from the employment of state employees.
Okay. I'll work with the department. I just wanted to make sure I got that up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
All right, seeing no further questions, welcome back to the committee, Ms. Hardwick, and please proceed.
Jane Hardwick, again, from the Department of Human Services. I will talk about three different documents that you should have in your packets or are receiving shortly. The first is a green single page that's just being handed out right now. That's a summary of the changes to the governor's budget that were released following the forecast. There are three sections in this particular document, broken out by new initiatives that you hadn't seen in an earlier budget proposal in January, provisions that we're referring to as budget fixes, and then subsequently changes that we refer to as forecast updates. All of the detail for all of these pages and the earlier pages that you receive have been handed out to you in a packet that has multiple colored pages, and that would replace some sections in the earlier budget book that you had received. The changes that I want to highlight, however, include in the new initiatives, and those are pink pages in that particular packet of material. There are two changes. The first refers to child care rate setting, which is under the purview of the Jobs Committee, so I won't go into detail there. The second is a proposal concerning pharmaceutical rebates and prescription drug discounts. That's on page 24A of that packet, and it's a pink page. Essentially, the governor is recommending that we seek manufacturer rebates at the Medicaid rebate level for prescription drugs provided to people who are enrolled in the GAMC program, and dedicate those resources toward the administration of a coordinated prescription drug discount program, essentially working with a variety of manufacturers to coordinate and consolidate one discount card so folks could seek those discounts using one card as opposed to some of the confusion that occurs with the existing manufactured drug discount system. And so that particular proposal does not have any effect on the general fund. Again, it would be dedicating those rebate revenues that we receive to that particular administrative activity. The next page that I'd like to reference is under the budget fixes, part of the green document. It's a pink page, page 44A, in the larger packet that you've gotten. It's essentially acknowledging that there will be a cancellation of about $17 million in state-operated services, mental health services, that was intended to be used to help transition the state-operated services, mental health infrastructure into community infrastructure. Those resources will not be expended, or we do not anticipate that those will be expended in fiscal year 2005. Because of budget rules, the fund balance acknowledges that those will cancel at the end of this fiscal year, and we are requesting a reappropriation of those same resources in fiscal year 2006, essentially aligning the money with the timing for that mental health transition.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Just to that point, I know you're just trying to do the overview here, but I know they're working to get people out of Anoka into regional, into community settings. Does that slow down the pace of that? Or as you don't spend the $17 million, or is there another plan in place?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, essentially the money will be aligning with the timing of the existing process.
So it's been delayed, Mr. Chair?
Ms. Hardwick.
And I don't want to drag, I can talk about it.
Representative Abler.
The change. So.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wes Koistra from the Department of Human Services. Representative Abler, the money that is being requested to be appropriated in 2006, the $17 million, is really related to the closure plans of the regional treatment centers other than Anoka. The Anoka, development of community services for the Anoka clients is not on a specific time frame.
Oh.
So this isn't related to that.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Hardwick, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other series of documents or proposals that are listed under the forecast update section of the green page are those pages that have been updated to reflect changes in the cost of those proposals as a result of changes in the forecast that was released in February. And so those are what we just referred to as forecast updated pages. And those are green pages in the larger packet of materials that you received. Mm-hmm. The other materials that you received, just for quick reference, the yellow pages are those pages on which there has been no change to the fiscal provisions. There's a blue document in the packet that is an updated tracking that reflects the updated costs associated with each of those pages. And then following that, there are a series of pages that are green that would go in the latter part of your three-ring binder under the background section where we've updated things like the TANF fund balance and other materials for your reference. And then lastly, I just want to quickly refer to another document that it was independently, I believe, included in your packets. It's a white document entitled Minnesota Department of Human Services February 2005 Forecast. We won't do a full-fledged forecast presentation for you, but we're providing this material, and my recommendation as you look at the material would be to look at the second page of the document where we highlight the big picture changes in terms of the moving pieces. The remainder of the document will provide for you information about the specifics about various changes within the budget activities. Essentially, there was relatively not substantial change in the February forecast over the November forecast.
Any questions for Ms. Hardwick? Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, I don't have that many questions. They're just all loaded in one section. So, Mr. Chair, Ms. Hardwick, back to my question about this intensive, better managed health care program. So I was reading the blue pages. I got a lot of colors of pages here. I'm trying to keep track. I was reading the detail, and it predicted that $1.2 million per biennium of those costs would be saved by federal participation as a federal share of the administrative costs. Given that, have you taken into consideration in that forecast the proposed changes at the federal level about how they're going to be block granting or maybe that money wouldn't be available for this purpose? Is that available anyway?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, the budget pages are based on current law. Current federal law does not put those funds in jeopardy, and so it does not reflect any proposed current changes.
So, Mr. Representative Abler, restate then. And so if indeed we get block granted with whatever addition or subtraction, then those funds will be part of that block grant, likely, and then we'll have to rethink the savings we might be getting or not, right?
Mr. Chair, certainly if federal law changes how the Medicaid resources are distributed, we would have to reconsider that and many other things in our Medicaid expenditure package.
Any further questions for Ms. Hardwick? Seeing none, back to you, Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So now we'll move into amendments, which are trying to accommodate this. But I do have one amendment that's a really simple one-word amendment. I would like to move on page 36, line 18 in the bill. I would like to reinstate the word Minnesota Care that was stricken. It's page 36, line 18. If you notice, the word Minnesota Care was stricken, and that shouldn't be. As we were going through this and I was asking questions, what we discovered, what they were thinking about was that with the new systems that the counties really wouldn't be involved in eligibility, but because there's some interconnect between programs, counties will still be. So it's just technical.
Representative Bradley, is your oral amendment intending to include the word or also?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, we should reinstate the words or Minnesota here.
Representative Bradley moves to amend House File 1422 by reinstating or Minnesota Care, line 18, page 36. Any discussion on that oral amendment? Any discussion? See no discussion. We'll proceed to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes. Amendment passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I was thinking, as Ms. Hardwick was explaining, that I would ask Representative Tao to repeat everything just to see if we all understood it, but I won't do that. I mean, there's a lot of information. I apologize. This is a complicated world, but we're trying to do it as rationally and logically as we can. Let me then, Mr. Chair, move Amendment A05-0271.
Representative Bradley moves to amend House File 1422 with the A05-0271 amendment. Representative Bradley, to your amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'll try to give you just sort of the highlights because most of it was discussed by Ms. Hardwick in the review. The substantive areas on page 1, line 2 through another area, this is what implements that that new pharmacy for GAMC, being able to see if we can negotiate for better prices for pharmaceuticals in the GAMC program. On page 13, there's language that was just omitted, so that's this is a provision that clarifies the Department of Human Services' obligation to inform the legislature of nursing facilities operating payment adjustments. On page 14, there's language that was clarifying the timing and use of case mix indices under the old and new systems, and that's sort of a transition plan. On page 13, on page 13, there's language there about safety net payments that would be implemented, and this is the phase-in year of the new nursing facility rate restructure, and it just clarifies how that the safety nets would be implemented during that time. And then finally, on page 15 is the most significant. That actually goes on for several pages. Goes from page 15 to page 28. This section is the section that was supposed to have been in the bill. This is the DHS mental health bill. I think what's in it, Emmer, you may be carrying a bill that is pretty much the same language, but this represents this matches the pages in the budget bill. This is not new news, but it was a piece that was omitted in the original draft of the bill. So that's what it's really doing. And as far as I know, Representative Emmer, I think that it's similar or is the same as what you'll be carrying in the department's mental health. I believe you've got policy language in the bill you're carrying. And, Mr. Chair, I'm not trying to slip anything by. I think in general all this does is add the language that bridges to the forecast and then does some things that are pretty much corrected. I don't think that we're not entering anything really new except for that GAMC prescription drug thing that was talked about.
Members, any questions, Representative
Wilkin? Chairman, Representative Bradley, does this take care of that oversight at the Department of Health, or is that in the next?
That's another one. Okay. That's coming. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Wilkin.
Representative Goodman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment looks pretty substantive. Do we have a House research summary on this?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chairman, I do not, and that's partly why I sort of had the department come here, because these things came in sort of at the last minute. So I do have the summary that we have. Did we run copies of that? But actually, it wouldn't have told you much more than what I just did. So the honest answer to you is I do not have a summary.
Representative Goodman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then would you go over again with me more detail about the changes in treatment foster care on pages 20 and 21 of this amendment? What are you doing there?
Representative Bradley.
I'm sorry, what was the page number on that?
20 and 21.
If there's someone from the department that would like to comment on this.
Yeah, this is in that section, that mental health section. And although I have it in front of me, I think it might be just quicker to have somebody that's much more close to this. So,
welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Don Allen. I'm with the Chemical and Mental Health Services Administration, DHS. Representative Goodwin, the Section 8 that starts on page 20 and runs for the next few pages.
Right.
This is the area where we set standards for Medicaid reimbursement for treatment foster care.
So
these talk about the standards of those programs that would have to meet in order to be eligible for Medicaid reimbursement.
Representative Goodwin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bradley and Mr. Sorry, I forgot your last
name. Allen.
Alan, thank you. I understand that, but it looks to me like you're making the criteria much more difficult for a child to fit in under this, under your new definition. And I know that it's already difficult to get treatment foster care, to get good homes for kids with emotional severe emotional disturbances. So could you explain to me what you're doing here and why in more detail?
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Goodwin, when we look at the care that's provided in treatment foster care settings, we see that it's an intensive combination of case management services as well as psychotherapy and rehabilitation skills. And so what we're doing in this area is applying existing standards for case management, psychotherapy, and children's mental health rehabilitative services, and saying that those providers of treatment foster care services have to provide services that are like and akin to the way we require providers who are doing those services individually.
Representative Goodwin?
Mr. Chair, and can't believe I forgot your name.
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Allen, and I've seen your name a million times. I'm sorry. This looks like it applies to the families that are the foster treatment, foster care families. Does it?
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Goodwin, no, it does not. This applies to the agencies that are providing the supportive services to the treatment foster homes. So agencies like PATH or Volunteers of America that would provide these services.
Okay.
Representative Goodwin?
Mr. Chair, and I won't ask any more questions about this, but I would like more information about this because it's pretty extensive changes, and I think it's important that we know what we're doing here. This is these kids are really important to have. So if it's improving the situation for these kids, that's great. But it's a little confusing to me at this point. So appreciate more information.
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Goodwin, at the moment, we really don't have any standards in place for treatment foster care. It's been mostly defined by host county contracts in terms of what they want to purchase from vendors. The umbrella rule passed that recently was implemented after some 9 years of work set some standards for the homes themselves. And so this is kind of a process of incrementally getting around to defining what treatment foster care will be in Minnesota. The implementation of these sections is put in the law here as July 1st of 2006. So we do have quite a bit of time and another legislative session to nail some of this stuff down in terms of some of the fine details. So lots of opportunity to work with you.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Thiessen, to the amendment.
Yes, these are also.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And this is more of a novice question, but what does Article 10 do that was added, this forecast adjustment? What's the purpose of that? It's just the very last thing in the amendment.
Representative Bradley.
I'm sorry, Article 10 in the...
In the last 31 in the amendment.
Okay.
It's... I have a feeling it's just technical, but I just want to make sure.
Let's make sure. Somebody. Yeah. Okay. I think you're right. But
okay.
To be honest with you, members, the reason I, just like you, and I think Representative Goodwin's right. By the way, Representative Goodwin, we'll see those sections in Representative Emmer's bill as well. I think your questions are well-founded, and it does deserve more discussion as well. But we'll see it there, and of course, then, as this bill comes back to us in its omnibus form, we'll probably see these things as well. But I didn't see it myself until just a couple of days ago, so that's why I'm floundering a little bit myself, just to explain.
Welcome, McBinney. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning. Katie Burns from the Department of Finance. Mr. Chair and Representative, Article 10, the forecast appropriation section is just a technical issue. What it does is to adjust fiscal year 2005 appropriations to reflect our current law obligations.
Okay.
And so all of the financial impact is taken into consideration as part of the forecast for fiscal 05. So that's why there are no new costs associated with the changes.
And if Representative, does that mean that we'll have, if it's, depending on whether it's negative or positive, we'll have more money in the budget for the next biennium? Or does that have nothing to do with it? It just balances the books for 05.
Ms. Burns.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it essentially just balances the books 405 when there are some changes that are made. There may be trends that affect our out-year estimates, and again, those are all built into our basic forecast and into FY06 07. But really, you just want to think about that as an FY05 appropriations adjustment issue.
Oh, Representative Thiessen.
Just a quick thought. So then when we're looking at what's happening to a particular program in 06, 07, we'll be basing it off the difference that perhaps could be in, that you would perceive in whether numbers are going up or down would be based on these numbers instead of some older numbers?
Ms. Burns.
Mr. Chair and Representative, our forecast for fiscal 06-07 is really the basis for your 06-07 appropriations decisions. It's just, I guess the point that I was trying to make is that some trends that may have changed in fiscal 05 may affect our out-year estimates as well. But again, those are all built into the base from which you are working.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess that's my question. For forecasted programs, we do build off the base. So if we're reducing the numbers in here, that's going to kind of reduce the starting point going forward.
Ms. Burns.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, that's true, but that is, again, all built into the FY06-07 estimates from which you are working. So legislators don't have to make any additional adjustments based on what's in the FY05 appropriations looking ahead to 06-07 because that's already built into your starting point.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any further questions or discussion on Bradley 0271 amendment?
Thank you.
Any further questions? See no further questions. We'll proceed to vote on the Bradley 0271 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment passes. Representative Bradley.
Chair and members, I would like to now move amendment A050275, and this is an amendment to the Health Department section.
Representative Bradley moves the A050275 amendment. Representative Bradley, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The major part of this amendment is to implement a proposal that you may have heard about, and there's quite a few pages in here that deal with the establishment of a statewide trauma system. And I think this has been a fairly popular amendment, but that's the one that is actually page 9 through, well, let's see, make sure I get my pages right here. Well, let me follow through with more in order, I'm sorry, because I jumped ahead of myself. First of all, in lines 1 and 2 of the first page is a simple section that's clarifying the fee for birth and death records, pretty much technical kind of thing. That they're payable upon receipt of the record rather than payable upon the application for getting the record. So that's fairly straightforward. Starting with line 4 and then going on is the establishment of the statewide trauma system, which also has a funny number of, I think it's a few hundred thousand dollars if I remember right. And then on page 9 of the amendment, that section goes through from page, the one we just said, the first page through about page 9. On page 9, lines 23 through 24 of the amendment are setting effective dates for well management fees that would take an effect in 2004, which is consistent with what the budget proposal said. So, in effect, really, the only part of this of substance outside of kind of the clarification is the section that establishes a voluntary trauma system. And, if somebody wanted some questions on it, I have read through it, but I would stand for questions, and if there's questions in that section, we can have someone come forward.
Representative Wilkins.
Mr. Chairman.
And I missed one.
Does it add back in the part of the language that the Health Department accidentally deleted on alternative health care?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wilkin, yes, it does. All of the operative language, short the fact that the Department of Health, the part that's removed is the Department of Health would no longer supervise, so that's where they'd make the savings of money. But all the rest of it in terms of defining it, all the other language would be reinstated.
Thank you.
And I think, just to be more specific with that, that would be on page 9, lines 19 through 21 is what reinstates that.
All right, move on. Representative Goodwin, to the amendment.
Chair. Representative Bradley, where did this come from? It seems to me like this is more policy-related stuff that probably should have been a separate bill in this committee and heard in more a little more detail than what we're able to hear it here. Who brought this to you, or where did it originate?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Goodman, this is a proposal from the Department of Health, but it is an outgrowth of a proposal that the governor, when the governor modified based on the February forecast and made some additional recommendations, which included largely the extra funding for education, there were some additional investments in the health and human services field, and this was one of them. So it was a proposal, I think, that's apparently been around, and Representative Powell probably knows more, a lot more about this than I do, but I think it was a proposal sort of waiting for an opportunity, and given the fact that there was some more money available, it was forwarded by the department now.
Oh. Representative Goodwin, follow up.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bradley, there was more money available. That's interesting because we're cutting so many people off of health care, but what money does this take? I don't see an amount in here. What will this cost?
Representative Goodwin, I believe in one of our handouts titled the Health Department Community and Family Health Promo. Should be in front of you, but we have someone here to answer it. So welcome to committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you. Margaret Kelly with the Department of Health. Mr. Chair and members, it is a new addition to our budget, a governor's recommendation, page 10A in the budget document, $382,000 of general fund dollars in fiscal year 06 and $352,000 in fiscal year 07 and each year thereafter.
That's a good one.
Thank you. And where does that new money come from? You said the general fund. I understand that, but I thought we had a big hole in the general fund, and that's why we're making all these cuts.
Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Goodwin, it was additional dollars that were available in the February forecast.
Well, Mr. Chair,
there still is a deficit in the fiscal year 06 and 07, but the deficit was not as large as anticipated in the February forecast.
Representative Goodwin.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, and that means that this bill has tails. We're taking money that is a one-time, supposedly, more money than we thought we were going to have. We still have a big hole in the budget, and we're taking that and doing some new thing here and not funding the things that we've already got that we know are needed. That seems a little like poor planning to me. But in addition to that, the governor has already promised most of that extra money to education. So, boy, that extra money is going a long way here. I don't know how that's going to work, but maybe you can help explain it to me.
Ms. Garrett, Representative Bradley.
Well, thank you, Ms. Chair. I think we're getting into the opinion. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's very clear. We know exactly how many additional dollars came on the table because of the new forecast. That happens. I mean, it happens all the time, sometimes up, sometimes down. And there's no extra spending. The money's not spent in multiple places. This is only $735,000. There was about $100 and some million that was allocated from that $234 million to education. But it was done in a balanced way. I think it's been widely publicized as to how that $234 million that became available because of change in the forecast. That happens all the time.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bradley, I'm not sure if the question is to you or somebody from the department. I am just interested on with the change, especially on page 3, line 16, with the naming privileges and change. I'm just interested. I am not as educated as it relates to the specifics around the trauma language that we've had in the past, and so that's the first question. Is that something brand new? And if so, where did that come from?
Representative, I think that Representative Powell has spent a lot of time in this field. It might be good for him to give us a little background.
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can just speak generally and probably the department more specifically, but we're one of nine states that doesn't have a coordinated trauma system, and the department has been working on this for quite some time, and there's been a lot of staff work over a period of at least a couple of years to try to get this initiated. It did not make the governor's cut to begin with, and however, with the February forecast, they were able to find room for this program in his budget recommendation. So your question specifically, one of the problems that we have is that you could be a regional trauma center, you can be a level one trauma center, but there has to be some coordination on how these hospitals are designated. That way, that's part of the structure of the trauma system. So consequently, the sickest people end up, or the most injured people end up at the correct place. So what I think what this section is saying is that a hospital just cannot open up and declare themselves a level one or level two trauma center when they're actually designated as a level four. And that's just my first reading of that without going in, without knowing any more about than what I just read.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Powell, that was helpful. So my follow-up question would be, how does this work with the current trauma hospital?
I think there's someone from the department here. If you could state your name for the record and proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Tim Held from Minnesota Department of Health, working with the development of this trauma system. And Representative, just for clarification as well, there is no definition of really a trauma center at all. So anybody could hang a sign that calls themselves a trauma system and or a trauma center, and there's no real definition for that anywhere. So this does help define that specifically and to what level of care each level of trauma center can provide. And so that's widely understood by the EMS community as well as the hospital community. So everybody knows what those resources are at each hospital that's participating.
Mr. Chair, so then my last question will be, I'm just trying to figure out, moving forward, Representative Powell gave some underlying of the changes. Are there any other changes? And we can use Hennepin County since that's my hospital. So how would that affect, if any, what would the changes be for Hennepin County?
Right, Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. That's a good question. And there's a lot of involvement in the development of this plan as well, and Hennepin County was at the table. And this is not going to change anything that they're doing right now. In fact, it's a recognition of the trauma care that a number of hospitals, including Hennepin County, are providing. And so it doesn't seek to change anything. In fact, it affirms what is happening with their trauma program, and it expands that statewide.
Thank you.
Representative Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just another quick question. How many trauma hospitals do we have in the state? And then with this bill and the, you know, actual qualifications for them, what would it expand that number to?
Mr. Held.
Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you. Good question. Right now, the only trauma hospitals in the state, because there is no state system and coordination, are verified by the American College of Surgeons. And those hospitals have done so on their own. They've sought that verification by the private organization of the college. And right now there's six of them, three at level one, and three of them are verified at level two. What we anticipate is a wide participation in this plan from most Minnesota hospitals. We think a bulk of those will be level fours, and some will be level threes all throughout Minnesota. I don't know that how many more changes there would be in those seeking level one and two. Those are pretty aggressive and pretty expensive commitments to make. I would see the ones we have staying, maybe a few other hospitals stepping up and trying to go after that, and this would permit that. But I think that we could see in a number of years a majority of hospitals participating in this system.
Mr. Chair.
You have a follow-up, Representative Samuelson?
Just a little bit of a follow-up. I guess I was also wondering why we need the legislation. And why can't the hospitals receive this designation from their accrediting body?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative, if I understand your question, I may not. but there's no criteria and no organization to do that verifying other than the American College of Surgeons. But again, that's a very expensive, labor-intensive process, and it's been 10 or 15 years since this has really started to happen in other states, and to just let it happen on its own and go after the College of Surgeons, it hasn't happened.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Walker, did you have a...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Representative Severinson asked one of my questions. The other question, you talked about the cost to go after this certification with this private organization. Is there a guesstimate about how much it would cost a new hospital to seek this certification?
Okay, Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. This past year, we pilot tested this program with seven hospitals, rural hospitals, to see. And one of the things we tried to get at was how much would this cost hospitals, so they'd have a sense of that up front. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, so this is going to be a guesstimate, but I believe those hospitals that going after a level 4 designation, which we think will be the majority of the hospitals, was around $4,000, and those were mostly based on training costs. Those going after level 3, which is a little more work, was about $10,000.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, but that's the startup cost. That's not the ongoing trainings or anything that the hospitals would incur?
Mr. Chair and Representative, that's the startup costs. And the ongoing would be less than that. There would be a process of training, and the system would be providing that.
Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how much of this money is going towards the hospitals, and how much of it is going towards the administration of this program?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you. This money will pay for 3 staff, so the administrative cost of this to oversight for all the hospitals in the state would be 3 staff. And also a large portion of that funding then would go for site survey teams. And those would be content expert who would be traveling to each hospital and verifying that they do have the resources that they say they do. And those content experts do come from the industry. So, for instance, a typical team would be made up of a trauma surgeon and a trauma nurse coordinator, and then probably a staff person would accompany them. And so these verifications are good for 3 years, and then it would be a redesignation every 3 years. So, you know, there'd be a lot of travel and costs that this would be reimbursement to those teams to provide that care. I will add that many states have set this up and charged their hospitals for this. And one of the pieces that was brought to the table earlier in developing this is that just probably wasn't going to be doable and feasible for hospitals to take on an extra charge to bring that. And so that was built into the budget that the site survey teams could go in and do that.
Well, Representative Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, then that answer is that it's all administrative costs. None of it goes to help the hospitals become trauma centers or get their equipment up to speed or their staff up to speed. It's all for the Department of Health then.
Mr. Chair and Representative, actually, another piece of that would be to help provide the trauma registry software and ongoing establishment of that. And so that is a key component for the hospitals. That's a cost that they would not have to take on. It would be provided to them, and then they would use that internally for their performance improvements and committees within the hospital to look at their trauma care and to make improvements on that. So that would be a large cost, again, that the hospitals won't be taking on. So the system is providing that for them.
Representative Abler, it's the amendment.
It's the amendment, not to this point anymore.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, and maybe to the department, just the information about the alternative and complementary piece. I'll wait till Governor Bradley's done. Mr. Chair, the amendment deletes a couple of repealers on the alternative and complementary part. If you read what they've still repealed, it's more than you'd want to actually repeal. And I'll work with the department to improve upon that. They took out just all the sections that involved using the word department or office, and because the office is being repealed. But this needs to be rewritten then to accommodate if it's going to go to the county attorney. Like there's immunity language. It says that these people can't call themselves doctor. It's a little bit too expensive. Don't discuss it now, Mr. Chair. I'm just pointing out that I'll work with them afterwards. Because I think that this was if you remember the fight, this was all over. I won't take us there again, but there was some good work done in some of these parts. And if we are going to go to the county, then I was suggesting to the department they spend maybe $5,000 in terms of someone who has to take the call and tell them where to call next, which may be the compromise to go for, but I'll help behind the scenes.
Mr. Chair, Representative April, I know what the intent was, and I will admit that not having a chance to have a review the absolute detail of it, this author will make sure that we instate that, and I'm wide open to your help.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I do want to point out, Mr. Chair, on the previous discussion that, in fact, the Hospital Association, all the hospitals actually have been a partner and actually a driving force in this trauma proposal. And as far as I know, and as far as the department knows, there's been no opposition from any place. So it really is on behalf of the hospitals that this has been being done.
Mr. Chair, one more question.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
2 minutes.
The trauma registry, is that brand new? Sorry.
Welcome back, Mr. Hill.
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. The question was, is the trauma registry new? Was that the question? Actually, no, it's not new. It's building on the basis of an existing injury system. The traumatic brain injury and spinal cord injury reporting system is required, and all hospitals are doing that. And so this was just added on. There's some extra data elements that were added on to that, but it's existing system. So they're not building a new thing or a new reporting structure for them.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you. You just said new data. What specifically would be taken? Is it just going to be the trauma itself, or what other information will be collected? Personal information, or?
Mr. Hill.
Representative and, Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you. The data, it will be just on major trauma patients, so a broken bone, heart attacks or anything like that aren't included in this. It's just dealing with the major trauma, and that's defined, I think, in the first or second page of the bill.
But is that the name?
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that the name or just the trauma itself and what hospital it came from? Is the intent for the department is just to keep track of the traumas themselves and the hospitals that are taking care of these situations mainly, but indirectly also receiving patient information? That would be your intent, but
right.
Will you be collecting that?
And Mr. Chair, Representative, whatever is collected in the traumatic brain injury, I believe that is collected in the normal TBI data, so that's what it would be. And then the data would be aggregated and given back to each individual hospital. So each hospital would have their own data to do their internal improvement structures, but then they would be able to measure themselves against other hospitals in aggregate.
Members, any further question on the 0275 Bradley Amendment? Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote on the Bradley 0275 Amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion amendment passes. Representative Bradley to
yeah.
The bill.
And Mr. Chair, for the amendment that was just adopted, I think Representative Walker brings up some interesting points. I admit I'm not sure, and I want to follow up myself and make sure we understand from a privacy point of view what kind of data is in this, because that would bear on whether this thing needs to go to some other committee or something. Plus, I think it's something we should know, and I can't tell that from reading the language, and we should know. So I intend to follow up on that. Good question. Mr. Chair, I think this, we do have time now for discussion. The only thing I would do is just kind of a quick wrap-up, because we have covered a lot of ground in a short time, just to maybe say some of the things that I've said before. The budget that accompanies these pages is a budget that does grow. And I think in aggregate, if I understand for the next biennium, we've reduced the growth for sort of the Health and Human Services cluster of expenses from around 18 or 19% to around 15 or 16. The reason I say the range is that it did change, and my calculations have been based on prior to the February forecast, but I think it's still in that range. So this is a budget that continues to grow and to spend on a whole host of programs in the health field. I've already made the mention, and I'm going to try myself to see if we can get something that better that clarifies this, but that we do have to look, I think, sort of collectively and in aggregate, the expenditures that we have in the healthcare safety net. the looking only at Minnesota Care or the Healthcare Access Fund, looking only at MA and the general fund, it just doesn't work anymore because we've had such cross population. The rate of spending increase at those 18 or 15%, one could argue, maybe even tough to sustain that, notwithstanding any others. We are going to proceed with hearing the public, but I think we've already indicated to the public that we know that we're going to have to do something to contain and slow down the rate of increase. So I certainly welcome as carrying this bill. There is nothing that is sacred. I think from the very beginning I've told the departments that it certainly is the right of this committee to make adjustments as we see fit. I know that many of you have indicated already to me some areas. I think we all can easily come up with areas where we'd like to spend more. But the reality is going to be that we're also going to have to contain the budget. And I'm wide open to maybe making alternative investments, but it's going to have to be at the expense of finding creative alternatives, and I'm wide open to those. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I will withhold. Maybe we can, Mr. Chair, so that we can conclude the discussion, because we're not actually voting to approve or anything. All we're going to do is the chair is going to lay it over. But I want to sort of redo my motion and then add something so that technically we're right. So I would renew my motion, Mr. Chair, that House File 1422 as amended be held over for possible inclusion, with the caveat that we authorize the staff to make technical corrections that might be associated with these. Particularly, there may be some number balancing, those kinds of things. Not to change the substance, but it's not unusual for us to do that because there may be some of those corrections. So in my motion, we would authorize staff to do that as well. And Mr. Chair, I think what we could actually do at this point is go ahead and gavel this as being held over, and then we can open up for discussion. All these things will come back to us again in some sort of form or shape as we move forward ultimately in an omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Bradley. The chair will now renew Representative Bradley's motion to lay over House File 1422 as amended. As amended with the authorization for staff to provide technical changes, and we'll lay that over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Service Finance Omnibus Bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Huntley, we'll go to discussion.
Oh, okay, so that was my question. Are we going to allow discussion now?
Yes, Representative Huntley, and actually Representative Goodwin will be the first one I will call on because I promised her I would. Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for keeping your promise. Representative Bradley, how many alternatives has your committee looked at, that you and your committee staff looked at to cutting these several thousand people off health care?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Goodwin, I think I've identified about 25 ideas so far that I'm trying to work through and get sizings and do work sort of on a personal level amongst the individual colleagues that have come to me with ideas. So that's my current count is up to that.
Representative Goodwin.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Bradley, are you dedicated to making sure that happens, that there's a way that we can prevent all these people from losing their health care?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Goodwin, I don't want to, and none of us should kid ourselves with false expectations. The alternatives that I'm talking about, everyone practically has a consequence. So in some cases it's easy, we can just do what makes sense and better integrity in our program, but others it's a matter of make this kind of limitation in benefits or eligibility or make this kind of limitation. There is no magic. The easy things largely have been done. There's not a whole lot more of those. But I think it's going to come down to some prioritization discussions, and if we don't like the governor's priorities in some areas, I'm open to think about others. I'm certainly thinking about some others. But in terms of buying back the health care benefit changes, I certainly can't promise. As a matter of fact, to be perfectly honest with you, let me just give you one because I'll try to be very straight with the committee where I'm coming from. When I think about priorities, probably one of my first priorities is what are we doing in the field for persons with developmental disabilities, mental health. The governor's budget doesn't have any increase for group homes, ICFMRs, and a whole group of continuing care people. I personally think as a first priority we need to find some money for those.
Well,
Representative
Mr. Chair and Representative Bradley, so you're saying that's the only places that we, the only thing that we could do is cut one group health care and to give to another group. We really need to, when we look at, we need to look way beyond outside the box from there, because that is not, those aren't the only choices that we have here. In addition, you're saying you are more concerned about increases in one area than people totally losing their health care. And I want you to know that 40% of the people on Minnesota Care take drugs for medication for mental illness. Yeah. So those people will be losing, they're entirely losing their health care. And I think that's real short-sighted, because in the long run, it's going to cost us all a lot more. And I think we should honestly be looking much further than just taking from one group of people in need and to give it to another group of people in need. There's a lot of other areas of our budget. There's a lot of other things we can do, and I'm disappointed that that's as short-sighted as this committee is going to get.
Mr. Chair, if I may quickly respond to that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, I just indicated that I have 25 ideas. I'm looking for your first.
Representative Wilkin.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I think that might kind of cover what I wanted to mention is we were all here, or many of us were here in 2003 struggling with the budget and trying to find alternatives, and there's a lot of hours put in doing that. And Representative Goodwin, I think we'd really welcome any ideas that you have on how to solve the budget issue here. But, you know, we can't just be critics of what the governor put forward or what Representative Bradley comes up with in his 25 other ideas. But, you know, I think Representative Bradley is truly sincere about, you know, looking for ideas. If the minority has ideas, bring them forward. Bring your alternative budget forward, and we'll take a look at it. And we'd love to incorporate some alternatives.
Well.
Representative Goodwin, to that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wilkin, we did introduce alternatives in 2003, and yes, we did. On the House floor, we had a bill. We had a lot of different ways of doing it from the way that you, your party, had decided to do it. I'm glad to work with that again, but it doesn't matter, because our bills don't get heard in committees, our bills don't get, our ideas don't get out, we're even stifled a lot of times from asking certain kinds of questions. So I am angry about this, and I'm angry about the governor even proposing this kind of cut. At the same time, we're working in your committee giving great big tax breaks to medical research firms that are already admitting before us that they already make millions of dollars. So I think the priorities are a little messed up, and that's my feeling, and I feel very strongly about that. And I think we do need to work together to change that. But let us work with you to change it then.
Mr. Chairman?
Absolutely.
To that, I'd love to see the. I never saw a comprehensive plan from the minority last time. Maybe I missed it, and I'd love to see it. We can always rehash. I've got a whole stack of ideas from last time that we didn't end up going forward with that we're going to go through again this year for alternatives. But I'd love to see the the minority plan that balanced the entire budget, because somehow I missed it. Mm-hmm.
Well, you did.
All right, I have Representative Eakin on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bradley. I wanted to talk just a little bit here about the, this is an Article 6, is it, dealing with the nursing homes and the transition to a new reimbursement system. And it states in that article that that high-quality nursing home facilities will be rewarded by having the option to transition to the new reimbursement system sooner. I was wondering how it is that how does the bill address the issue of determining high-quality nursing homes? What criteria are used? Is it just based on the inspections that are being done, or are there other criteria being used for that purpose?
Representative Bradley, I think you addressed the 8 or 9 different quality factors when you went over this, but I'll turn it over to you on that one.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to get to the right page. It's Article
4.
Mr. Chair and Representative Eakin, let me just sort of in general, and then if necessary, we could call somebody forth. There is a beginning set of some of the criteria, and it does include things like staffing. It does include some connection to the survey results. I'm looking for some reason. I'm not finding the specific list, and I thought I had it right in front of me here. Maybe if I can.
Does someone from the department come up, quick?
Mr. Held, if you can come forward.
Welcome to the committee. Members, we have about three minutes left here, so we'll keep this.
It has been brought to my attention, so if members want to go to, on your summary, page 13, subdivision 57, there is an indication. And the for the initial year, it would include the direct care hours per standardized resident day, staff turnover, staff retention, use of pool staff, which this is kind of an inverse, the less the better, a portion of beds in single bedrooms versus in multiple bedrooms, quality indicators from the minimum data set, I'm not sure what all those might be, survey deficiencies, consumer satisfaction, there's intending to be a survey technique to be used to measure consumer satisfaction. This is the actual residents and their families. And I guess that's it.
Representative Eakin, I have Representative Huntley and Representative Walker on the list too, and we have 3 minutes, so
okay.
Good question.
Just very quickly, thank you, and I'm glad to see that there's a number of criteria being used. I'm somewhat concerned about the surveys because of the inconsistencies in that. And just one last question on that. I guess two questions. One, how much do the surveys, how much of a role will they play in determining whether it's a quality institution? And number two, does the bill address the issue, or what language in the bill would address the issue of the inconsistencies?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, there really isn't anything, to be honest with you, in the bill about the inconsistencies, and I share many of your concerns, you know, where we've been in this committee. The only salvation to me in that regard is, first of all, and I don't know what the, because I don't think that they've put the ratings yet on them, they're still working through that. That's one. Two, if you look at the language, even in the second year of the biennium, only 10% of the rate increase will be based on the overall quality target, and it phases in over several years. So I think the saving grace of this thing is that there's going to be some evolution. There's no question about it. And the survey, there's a lot of work going on outside of this that I'm party to, where we're trying to get better consistency, and the Department of Health is well aware. But in its infancy in implementation, the impact, even if it is inconsistent, would be really very small in comparison to all the measures, at least as I read it now. And it won't even start getting effect until we actually have another legislative session, and we ought to have another chance to see it in 2006. But that's fair questions.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering if there's someone here from the Department of Human Services that could come down and tell us with these changes today, what is the department predicting as to the number of people who will lose health insurance? Is it still 26,788?
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Barb Julek from the Department of Human Services. Representative Huntley, the number is about approximately 22,500. It's gone down a bit, mostly because the forecast has gone down.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, at a time when we've just found out 2 weeks ago that the uninsured level is increasing in the state for the first time in probably 15 years. In fact, it's gone up 30%. What we're doing with this bill is kicking another 22,500 people off of health insurance, and I don't know how this bill then is addressing a major problem in this state, which is giving people good care. What we've done, again, when we kick them off of health insurance, they don't go away. They still show up at the hospital. Their uncompensated care in hospitals went up 28% last year, 38% at Hennepin County Hospital. And we have a sheet here from the Department of Health that's just really fitting the budget changes, and including one called Adverse Events. And practically everything in this bill is an adverse event. And on this sheet, what we're doing at the same time, we're cutting, on another sheet, cutting hospitals 5%. We're increasing their fees 7 to 11%, according to this sheet. So what we're doing is kicking 22,500 people now off of health insurance. They won't go away. They're still going to show up at hospitals. They're still going to get treated. And the hospitals are put into severe stress. And the fact that people don't have health insurance leads them, in some cases, to die because they don't have health insurance. Okay. And quite well shown that if people don't have health insurance, their health status declines compared to the rest of the population.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually, since time is short, not going to bring up some of the concerns I have. I'll wait for the bill to come back, and hopefully it's improved after you've gotten through your 25 suggestions and sorted through a couple of whatever we're going to be offering up. I do want to just bring up one of the issues that a couple of my constituents do have concerns with, and Representative Abler did touch on it as it relates to making sure that the language was still in there with the alternative care. If someone from the department can get me that deals with this particular issue, that I can get some follow-up questions, I greatly appreciate it.
That's it. Wilkin, wrap it up.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, thanks. I wonder if Ms. Jula can give me a brief clarification. The 22,000, are those all current enrollees, or is that projected enrollment? How many current enrollees would lose benefits?
Ms. Jula.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Wilkin, I don't know what the proportion would be, and I don't know if we...
Yeah, I think it would, Mr. Chairman, I think it would be important to find that out because we keep referring to kicking people off, and last time we used this number of 38,000, which was a kind of a fictitious number because most of those were not on any of the programs at that time.
Mr. Chairman, the 22,500, Mr. Chairman, is a net enrollment estimate based on the fiscal year 2007 forecast of enrollment.
I think it'd be important to get those numbers eventually so we know the number of people who are currently on programs who will lose benefits, because I think that number will be substantially lower than the 22,000.
Mr. Chair.
All right, Representative Walker.
Since they're going to be finding out this information, I'd also request how many of... If there are specific numbers that may be, I'm no longer receiving Minnesota Care, how many of those numbers have now been shifted to one of our other programs where they're not necessarily considered working anymore?
All right, members. Quick housekeeping before we adjourn. Let's save a tree and save our materials for tomorrow. Literally, it is probably a tree with this thick bill. So put them in your folder, save them for tomorrow. Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Church. It's sort of a quick wrap up. I don't want to kid anybody. I mean, there are some tough choices in here, and I respect. Not, I don't know that it makes it feel any better, but able-bodied adults without children could travel anywhere in our 9-10 state region and find no benefits at all. And we will still maintain a GAMC safety net. I'll agree with you. It's not as good. I don't know for sure, and I'm going to take the best estimate now that there will be 22,000 people who will lose their eligibility as a result of this. And I don't particularly like doing that either. I'm looking for alternatives, and I certainly welcome those. But on the other hand, I think we also have to keep in mind that we don't all necessarily not find other options. I mean, many of them do find other options. We've helped people access prescription drug assistance programs, those kinds of things. But I mean, in the bottom line, none of us want to try to make difficult decisions. I'm sure Tennessee didn't want to make the decision to remove 300,000 people from TennCare. I'm sure Oregon, that's oftentimes touted as one of the most generous states in social programs, didn't want to remove 120,000 people from theirs either. But you looked at the curves, you looked at the direction. In the end, we have to balance the checkbook. And if it's not these things, then we need some pretty doggone creative ideas. As a standard, at least of looking at the national average, because in the aggregate, even if all these things were done, we still would spend more per capita in Minnesota on public assisted health care than virtually any other state in the nation. So our taxpayers still are very generous. Tough choices, yes. Alternatives, welcomed. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
This meeting is now adjourned.